Hello and welcome to the 42nd episode of the Pop Papa Napcast. I'm your host, TJ Deitch. I also run the website poppapa.com that hosts this very podcast. That's poppapa.com. I hope everyone had a happy and safe New Year's and survived the snowstorms that have seemingly swept the country after the fact. We did pretty well. If you listened to my last episode, I was recording before New Year's. But this holiday really snuck up on me, and I kind of completely forgot how close it was. I thought I still had a couple more days. And then the next thing I know, it is New Year's, and I'm running around trying to get some errands done before the snow hits us, which it did, but it wasn't too bad. And we actually had a very easy breezy snow clear out, which shocked me, especially after the last one. So, you know, we did pretty well. We didn't really do anything on New Year's. None of our friends had parties, and we did not because ever since Lucy was born, the house has been kind of a mess that only parents come into. We used to have kind of an annual New Year's party for like 2 or 3 years, I think. It was a lot of fun. The other reason that we don't really have bigger parties anymore is because a lot of the friends that I made while I was working at Wizard have all kind of moved on to different areas, so it's just a much smaller group. So if like one or two people can't make it now, it's like, well, it's not really a party, it's more of a get-together. Plus, like I said, the weather was questionable, and so we just kind of took it easy and didn't do anything. But I gotta admit, around the holidays, or kind of what I call the high-drinking holidays, which are St. Patrick's Day, New Year's Eve, that's pretty much it. Maybe Halloween. That was never a really big drinking holiday for me personally, but, you know, I guess you could list it there. I do miss having the, the freedom to go out and kind of hang out with my friends. Like I said, part of that is because a lot of our friends live several hours away now. And then other friends have kids, and we have kids, obviously. So it can be a lot harder to kind of make something happen. But I gotta say, when I was sitting around on New Year's Eve, and my wife was like gonna go take a nap or something for a couple, like 20, 30 minutes so she could make it till midnight, I was like, well, this is a little, it's a little boring compared to what we used to do. So hopefully, if we do get into a house next year, I have vowed, and anybody listening can take heed to this, but if we are in a house next New Year's Eve, I want to have a party. And I think it should be pretty awesome. It's been probably 3 years since we've had a party here. We did New Year's, like I said. We did St. Patrick's Day at least once, and then we would have birthday parties. But since M's birthday is, well, today that I'm recording in early January, and mine is in early February, it can be tricky. Like, we had a party planned in the last couple years for my birthday. It was going to be a combined birthday party, I think, for us here at our place. But we got, like, a gigantic snowstorm and then weren't able to kind of do anything. But I do miss having parties, and especially now that I cook more, I would love to do kind of like a bigger dinner party. It's just something need to plan. We really need more space. It's hard to clean up what we have as far as kid paraphernalia in the living room goes. And I know our friends don't really care, but, you know, there's that. And then we need more space to, like, sleep people, especially if our friends are coming up from, you know, New Jersey or New York City. Got to give them a place to stay that's not just on the floor, which was okay when we were younger and did happen at our New Year's party a few times. But, you know, we're in our 30s now, so it's time to get some spare beds, I guess. So hopefully, like I said, next year, that's kind of a resolution I've made. I don't really do New Year's resolutions too much, aside from the usual be less fat and write more. Those are kind of the two that I do every year, and I am hoping to do both of those. I mentioned the Lose It app on the last episode. I've not started using it yet because, again, like I mentioned, I didn't realize how quick New Year's Eve was coming up, and then New Year's Day, and then M's parents visited over the weekend for her birthday and for second Christmas, and I did not want to, like, be a party pooper. Plus, I just like eating all that food. I also kind of don't know if I have the willpower to do it anymore, but we'll see. It's really that kind of cost-benefit scenario, you know? How much is it going to cost me to lose the weight, and how much do I benefit from that? I would like to be lighter, but I'm kind of lazy, so I don't know how that'll work out, and I don't have a lot of opportunities to get out and get exercise done. Although I should do like a DVD or something on Netflix or at our house. Anyway, I did mention that I don't really do strict New Year's resolutions. Last year I did a bunch around my birthday, and I think I did all right because I was turning 30. I'm turning 31 in a month, and we're going to be in Disney World, which will be nice. But for the most part, I don't really make too many goals. I have said before that I do feel the need to really get something written and polished that I can start passing to people and kind of start seeing if that's going to happen. It's not really a midlife crisis, I hope, because I'm only 30 or going to be 31. But I've really been thinking a lot about like my future and what I'm going to do. And I mean, this freelance thing works really well for right now, but it's not really what I want to do for the rest of my life. And I'm not really sure what I want to do for the rest of my life. I've even thought about getting into the food industry, but you know, I've never had any experience. By the time, you know, kiddo number two is in school, I'm going to be like 38. Oh my gosh. Or something. And so, you know, I don't know if there's much future there, but maybe like a catering thing that I could work at. I don't need to own anything. I'm trying to think of other things I can do and kind of get out there and spread my wings a little bit. But my concern with that is that, you know, like now I write most of the day or do whatever for my work, my freelance work. And then I really enjoy going in the kitchen at 5 and kind of decompressing and doing something that's pretty much completely different from everything I've done earlier that day. And I wonder if, you know, if I did do it as some kind of a job, I probably wouldn't feel that same way about making dinner. But I mean, I'm just kind of spitballing here, just thinking about the future and whatnot with the new year. But I also kind of wanted to look back at 2013 and kind of think about what I did do, because, you know, when the new year comes, I always think of like, you know, how much did I really do this year? And sometimes I get kind of negative about, well, I didn't get anything published and I didn't, you know, make a third draft on anything and I didn't add any new gigs to my freelance routine. So I did kind of want to get into more of a positive headspace and look back. I did start this podcast. I knocked out 40 episodes in a year. I think I missed 3 weeks due to vacations and holidays and whatnot, which isn't too bad. I'm pretty proud of that. I do it myself. I cut it. I post it. I haven't really nailed down a set posting time, but, you know, I've been getting better at it. I do have an idea for a second podcast that I am thinking about kicking off. Got to talk to a few people and see if there's interest. But, you know, it's kind of neat to just do this, sit in front of a microphone every week, get my thoughts out. Not only does it help me kind of process the week and remember some things I might have forgotten, but it also puts it out there. You know, my original intent was to really start kind of a dialogue about parenting, especially from the perspective of a stay-at-home dad or work-from-home dad, or even work-from-home parents in general. It hasn't really happened. I don't get a lot of comments, and I don't know how many people outside of those that I already know listen to this. But one thing that has been kind of nice is like an added benefit is that my family is able to keep up on what's going on with us and Lucy and all that. So that's a nice benefit that I didn't really think about when I started it, but it works out. Between this and the photo diaries, you know, they're getting a better picture of kind of what goes on with us and specifically with her than they might have otherwise, because I'm not the best at, you know, calling everybody. While I didn't stay up on photo diaries very well, I think I've only been caught up like 4 or 5 times the whole year. I have figured out a few ways to kind of streamline the process, which kind of does make it go a little bit faster. The main thing that really sets me back is sitting down and putting all the pictures on, because that usually involves me having to dump either old pictures or old podcasts or whatever onto our external hard drive and then making space and then getting the pictures on and all this stuff. But, you know, not a big deal. Work-wise this year, like I mentioned before, I didn't add any new places that I'm writing for, but I didn't lose any. My beat changed at CBR, which has led to a little bit less work, but, you know, it wasn't like a demotion or anything. I got a different company that I'm covering. They just don't put out as many books, so there's not as many opportunities. I tried to kind of make some new ones. I think this year I launched my toy column. It might have been late 2012. I'm not quite sure, but you know, I used to work at a magazine called Toy Fair for a while, and before I actually worked at the magazine proper, I worked at Wizard in the research department and did some work with and for that magazine. And I've been a toy fan forever. I was able to get a weekly toy column going on Comic Book Resources called Toying Around, which I'm pretty proud of. I got to interview some cool people, And even though there's less work with my new beat, it is neat getting in with some different people and then talking to some others that I met on my old beat who are kind of moving around and doing more things. One of the coolest things about my job has been seeing a lot of the creators that I talk to who were working on image books, you know, in the last couple years, who were getting, you know, their first big shot, really, now kind of move up and beyond, and they're writing for Marvel and DC and doing all this crazy stuff, and it's really cool to kind of see that. I mean, I know I didn't have anything to do with any of it, but you feel like, you know, you hyped these guys when they were coming up, and then they got bigger, and, you know, maybe in a tiny, tiny portion of those readers picked the book up because of an interview I did, and, you know, I feel a connection to some of those writers, which is cool, and I'm glad to see their success. On a personal level, regarding comic books, I've kind of lost touch with pretty much everything modern. I still read trades. Unfortunately, the site that I used to go to swap comic book collections, which is called Sequential Swap, got hacked, like, halfway through the year or something, and I didn't even realize it at first, and apparently all the information got wiped out. So basically what you used to do is you would go on and you could search by title, just alphabetically, look if there was a book you wanted, you clicked on it, and then it took you to the page of the person that was willing to trade that book, and then you would email them and say, hey, here's my list, I want this and this from your list, can we make a swap? And then all you pay for is shipping and handling, which is just the shipping and then buying an envelope or whatever. And then you got, you know, new trades. And I've gotten a ton of great stuff. I filled out some big holes in my collection using that service. But unfortunately, it's gone now. There's some more that are, like, way more complicated. You, like, join and then you get a token and then you trade a token for this and all this stuff. And I don't really want to mess around with that. So my intake of trades has gone down. But I have had some good luck with some things that I was either unfamiliar with and read, or some collections of stuff that I read as a kid, like these Batman books that will be reviewed on United Monkey, that's MONKEE.com, this week. So it's just been fun. I'm at the point of the year where I'm kind of looking at the piles of books that I have around my house and my bed and my makeshift desk, which is just the table across from my couch. And I am cleaning up what I've read. I want to finish things and kind of start new and then move on from there. I got two books I'm going to talk about a little bit later on that I think are fun for kids. But they're older reprints of things that came out in like the 40s and 50s. As far as movies and TV and all that go, you know, you like shows, you don't like shows, you kind of move around. I've grown really to not like reality shows nearly as much as I used to. I used to kind of watch them and laugh at the people, and now I just can't really get into that anymore, especially like a show like Doomsday Preppers. At first I was like, wow, these people are crazy. And then I realized that there's probably a few of those people who are going to murder somebody because they're crazy, and they are constantly talking about, you know, protecting themselves and doing whatever it takes to do these things. And I feel like some of them probably are not waiting for any kind of apocalyptic event to actually go off the handle. And then once I kind of had that realization, it was a bit of a bummer. I've been really disappointed with Discovery Channel lately. I still like a few of the shows. I mean, Mythbusters is like the best, and I watch it whenever I can and whenever it's on. But, you know, they've got so many just shows that don't make any sense to me anymore. I wrote about this a little bit on my blog, but, you know, like, how is Moonshiners legal? It's impossible, right? Like, they're either not making whiskey when they're on camera, or something else is going on, but, or it's just all recreations later on. And I don't really like that. I've been kind of thinking about that a lot this year. And there's the line of like, well, what's really the difference? If you're just watching a show for entertainment value of some kind, and you're interested in the story, why does it matter? And I feel like it matters because you're being lied to in one sense. If you're watching a scripted show, if you're watching, say, you know, Sons of Anarchy, which I've never seen, but it'll make sense, the comparison, in a minute. You know that's a scripted show. It's shot like one. Nobody's ever said it's a reality show. And, you know, you're just along for the ride and see what happens. But then Discovery has a show like The Devil's Ride, which is supposedly a show that follows around a motorcycle club in California. Now, these are groups that are considered wildly protective of their privacy. So the mere fact that they would have anybody there with cameras is questionable. Then you've got to think that, like, there is some illegal activity going on. And how I don't understand the legal way that makes sense of, like, if you're showing something illegal on television that's being recorded, how is that not just evidence in your trial? And that the only reason that makes sense to me is that you're not actually showing anything illegal, because it's all like a setup or a recreation or any of that kind of stuff. So I don't know. I don't like the idea of being told, like, hey, this is a reality show. And then, like, in really small type, when that zims by towards the end, it's like, some of these portions were filmed after the fact. It's like, well, come on, how much of it? Just tell me. It's a thing I get hung up on. I appreciate honesty in my life, and I feel like a lot of these shows don't give it to you. Still, I watch Moonshiners. I've given up on, like, Amish Mafia and, well, Devil's Ride hasn't come back yet, but I'll probably watch it. I don't know. It doesn't, like, make me super mad. It's just something that I've been thinking about. And like I said, I did blog about it a little bit, and I'll throw a link to that on the episode 42 show notes on poppapa.com, so you kind of know what I mean. I thought Fox's Tuesday lineup of comedies was super solid. Dads and Brooklyn Nine-Nine are in the same spot as Shield, and I was just like, you know what? I'd seen those before Shield launched, and I kind of liked them both. Dad's had a lot of controversy behind it. I think it's just a funny, silly show that people are taking too seriously. I get it if you're offended by it and you don't have to watch it, but, you know, I'm glad it's still around. And then in the 9 o'clock spot, you've still got New Girl and Mindy Project, which are two of my favorite shows. So the comedy has been great. I still like Big Bang Theory, Modern Family. I missed all of Parks and Rec this year, which was a bummer, but, you know, I know it's on Netflix, and so I'll get caught up on that. Movies, you know, I didn't get out to the theater very often, although we did just go see Frozen. There's going to be a review on poppapa.com by the time you listen to this. And Lucy did awesome. Again, I'll talk a little bit about that later on in the episode. I think I saw Man of Steel and maybe a couple other movies. I went to Man of Steel by myself, and I loved that. And then we saw Iron Man 3 and Monsters University at the drive-in. And I think we went to a couple other drive-in experiences. And those were all fun. I do miss going to the movies a little bit. But I think I just rather... I'm more comfortable in my own home. And not just because, you know, it's surrounded by my own stuff and I can pause it if I want to. But I get real uncomfortable when I can't, like, kind of stretch my legs out. And that's what happens in movie theaters. That's my old man complaint of the episode. At least one of them. Books... there's a couple links to these on my blog, and I'll put them in the show notes. But one of the books that I read this year that really, like, hit home and I thought was awesome was Max Eisenstock's Raiders. And it was about the kids that made the Raiders fan film back in the 80s. Basically, they recreated Raiders of the Lost Ark in and around their house. And then all this crazy stuff happened to them afterwards. It reminded me of the movie Son of Rambo, which is about a kid who saw Rambo and then decided to remake that. And then kind of like all the insanity that went along with it. And, you know, it's just that creativity that I had parts of when I was a kid, but I kind of wish I had more of. Like, I never even thought to make my own movies when I was younger. That kind of, like, lack of thinking I really regret, because it would have been great to be one of those people that kind of, like, started doing it when they were young and then kind of worked it out as they went on. I've had way too many stretches of my life where I wasn't doing creative things and then kind of realized later on that I was missing out on a lot of great time to do those things. But that, you know, that's just life. That's how that works out. I also, on the show, I've talked about The Shining and how much that affected me more now as an adult than it did when I was younger, but in different ways, and I think that's a great way to kind of absorb the material. And I think that's about it. I mean, there's probably a million things I'm forgetting, but just a little bit of the kind of things I liked this year. That was all media that I kind of absorbed. There's tons more. I mean, I did some year-end record reviews on United Monkey, and then thinking about, like, writing and stuff, I did write an entire 7-issue comic book series that I don't think is very good. I haven't gone back and read it yet, but I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be worth salvaging without a complete rewrite at this point, but it was good to do it. I know the way you're supposed to write these things is to kind of do an outline and then pitch it to an editor, but I figured I would just sit and write it and just have that experience and see what that was like. I wrote another 6-issue series after that that I think is much better. I started editing a script that I wrote several years ago, and I realized is pretty bonkers. But I still think there's some good kernels there that just need a little bit of rewriting and some more well thought out like mythology behind it. I've also got a couple shorter projects that I wanted to work on. I kind of need to start focusing a little bit better and also, you know, wheeling and dealing a little bit more and getting my stuff out there and talking to my friends and any contacts I have, because I do feel a clock ticking. I don't know if it's just the second baby or my age or whatever, but I need to really start doing stuff and start getting things done. I did actually start a new writing project. I feel like I talk about these like every couple of weeks. It's kind of a spy thing that I'm excited to keep putting down on paper. I'm doing that one, typing it. I've handwritten a lot of stuff this year. I'm doing this one typing, and I am just started. I kind of like what I'm doing. It's surprising, which I enjoy. Surprising me. I also typed up a handwritten screenplay that I wrote back in 2012 that has a little bit of potential. I don't know. I mean, I'm talking about writing screenplays and comic books as a guy who's done nothing publicly. So this is all pie in the sky stuff. But, you know, this is kind of what I want to do, and I've got to really start focusing on it. Otherwise, I'm just a guy that keeps talking about these things on a podcast, and they're not going to happen. I do kind of want to get one of those books that's like, every day is a different, like, task, and there's 365 pages in it. So it's like, on this day, draw a plant or whatever, and then the next day is something else. Just kind of something to, just something else to do. I think that would be nice. So I feel like I'm kind of rambling a lot here. It's been a crazy year. You know, I just talked about all these things that have nothing to do with my daughter, who I have continued to raise from day to day along with my wife. She's still alive and healthy, which I think is a thumbs up. She's like a happy kid. And she seems to be the kind of person that, like, people are drawn to. People that don't really like kids or don't seem like they would like kids love her, and she just has a great presence that I don't, you know, attribute to anything mystical or anything, but it's just there. She's usually a delightful person to be around, although today I did get yelled at several times for things that I don't even remember. But, you know, I know at least partially that I'm doing the best work I've ever done just by raising her, and all the other stuff kind of comes secondary. But it's hard to think about that sometimes when you're the main caretaker. Even if you're working from home and taking care of the kid, that always takes precedence. And I think it's easy to kind of lose yourself sometimes in your service to another person. And I'm curious how that's going to be when the new baby comes along, how the dynamic will change, if at all, and, you know, what new challenges that's going to bring. Of course, the new baby is the biggest thing that happened in 2013, finding out about it. And then, of course, coming up, we're going to have him or her in our lives. We're going to find out actually this week on the 9th what the sex is. And so I'll let everybody know on the podcast the next week. But, you know, it's really exciting. It's exciting. It's scary. It's exciting in ways that, you know, even though I kind of know what it was like the first time, there's so many things you forget. And I've got kind of a in the moment mentality for a lot of things. So it's like once I got past certain hurdles with Lucy, I kind of didn't go back and think about them. But those hurdles are going to come back up in new and different ways, maybe different configurations and whatnot with the new baby. So we'll see kind of how that goes. And another reason that I know that I feel kind of pressured to really focus on writing, especially now when I can, is because I know that my time is going to be very limited once the baby is born. I mean, my wife's going to have a great maternity leave, and we'll have parents in and out helping and friends and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, obviously for a while, it's just going to be really focused on that. And, you know, that's great. That's how it should be. Yeah, I mean, new baby, if it's a boy, you know, that's a little bit of a different dynamic, or is it? I don't really know. I'm partially worried that I'm going to treat a boy different because it's a boy. Even though I was very set with Lucy, once we knew it was a girl, that I wouldn't treat her different. I don't know. It's you never know what kind of social hangups are kind of hiding in your brain that you're going to kind of have to encounter and deal with as you kind of progress in life. So that's kind of where we're at. That's kind of a bit of a year in review, I guess. I did mention Frozen. We went to Lucy's very first movie at the theaters. She's been to the drive-in several times, but this was her first movie at the theaters. She sat up on a little booster and loved the movie. Like I said, there's a review on my blog that you can check out, but she, at the end of it, she goes, "Mommy, Daddy, I love this movie." And she's been talking about it every day since. And we've already pre-ordered the Blu-ray for when it comes out in a couple months. And I bought the soundtrack and all this stuff. And she, the craziest thing was that she like knew the song. She was kind of singing them before I bought the soundtrack, which is why I went on Amazon and got it for like $6 or $7 on the Amazon MP3 site. And so she, you know, I'll play that every now and then and she'll sing along with it. It's just, it's great. It's cool to see her like something so much. I also mentioned a couple of books that I read recently that I think might be potentially good for kids, although one of them definitely has a caveat. These are older books, and I will be reviewing them in more detail on United Monkey next week. But one of them is called Uncle Scrooge, Only a Poor Old Man by Carl Barks. This comes out from Fantagraphic Books. Back in the 40s and 50s and 60s, there was a guy named Carl Barks who drew a ton of duck stories. These were originally Donald Duck and his nephews, Huey, Dewey, and Louie. And then eventually he did a lot of Scrooge McDuck, Uncle Scrooge-centric stories. And this is a collection, I believe, of the first ones that were mainly focusing on Uncle Scrooge. He appeared before this, but this is kind of his first main book. And it's, I got this partially because there's all these old comic books and strips that you hear people talk about, like historians, and they're in books, and, you know, kind of the upper crust critics talk about that, you know, aren't super accessible. Well, in the past couple years, Fantagraphics has started collecting, I think they call it the Carl Barks Library, the Disney Library, in these great little hardcovers. This one costs $28.99. I got it on Amazon for cheaper than that, I think. So I was curious because people always talk about how great these are. And I tried to track down the one that was like the first one because I like starting at the beginning, which doesn't actually matter in this case. But the other reason is that Lucy has gone back and forth on watching DuckTales cartoons. So she's familiar with Uncle Scrooge and Huey, Dewey, and Louie, who are also in some of the Disney Christmas movies we watched on Netflix. And so I got this and I tried reading it with her a couple of times, but she's not really into the idea of sitting down and reading books unless they're shorter and she chooses them. I also don't think she quite understands the comic book setup because she'll just look at a page and point out every time Huey, Dewey, and Louie show up or Donald. So I kind of read this one on my own with the hopes that in the future she will enjoy it. And it's pretty cool. Like, there's just all kinds of, you know, fantasy adventure stories. They're globetrotting, they're doing all these things and having fun adventures, most of which revolve around Scrooge thinking that his money's in danger and then doing something that winds up putting it in more danger and then he has to go back and get it. My one complaint about this, not complaint, but the thing that I was surprised by and that might put a few people off is how long the main stories are. They're like 30-some pages sometimes and there's a lot of gags that you kind of already see coming and things like that, but you've got to keep in mind that, like, you're reading something that influenced all the things later on that were then referenced in those movies and whatnot. There's, like, one thing in here that's straight out of The Gods Must Be Crazy. But, obviously, The Gods Must Be Crazy came out after that. And, you know, these comics, for the people that were kind of growing up in that time, were hugely popular and had a huge influence on them. So you're reading something that might be considered original material, but it seems a little bit older or reused because people used it later on as reference. Plus, you know, some of the gags are just, they're for kids, so you got to take that into consideration. But I was surprised at how long the main stories are. They just kind of keep going. They're kind of a three-act structure, and it works out pretty well. If you wanted to stop at certain points, it would make sense. But I am curious to see, you know, if Lucy is still interested in the ducks when she gets older, if she has any interest in reading this. I also have a couple Floyd Gottfredson Mickey Mouse newspaper strip books. I've started reading the first one And I've been very slowly going through it. And again, she'll kind of look at it with me and want to look at it, but then not really want to read it. So I'm slowly going through that. But that's not the second book I was talking about. The second book I was actually talking about before was The Adventures of Tintin, The Secret of the Unicorn by Herge. I was at New York Comic Con this year, and I don't really look at comics single issues very much anymore. But what I do look for is cheap trades. And there was a guy with several dozen $5 trade boxes. And so when I had a couple of minutes to myself, I went over there and I would look through and I got some other books. But one of the things I did get was this basically graphic novel. This came out in 1943. Tintin is basically like a young man reporter who kind of gets involved in all these mysteries. And in this case, he stumbles upon three ships that each have a piece of a puzzle that will lead to a bigger treasure. And this is actually just part one, where he finds all the pieces and things keep happening, and the second one, he actually finds the treasure. This inspired the movie Tintin that came out by Steven Spielberg in the past couple years, which I saw, but I don't really remember. I remembered a couple scenes from reading this, and I was like, oh yeah, I remember that, but I gotta watch that movie again. I think it's on Netflix Instant, or it was. There was a big purge on January 1st, so a lot of things aren't up there anymore. But this is a really fun adventure story that was also just really well set up. There's kind of like one through story, and then there's kind of these other ones that weave around it that wind up being pertinent later on. And it's just, it moves at a fast clip. And the nice thing about this version that I have, which is from Little Brown Publishing, first of all, it's only $9. I got it for $5, but it's $9. And there's a lot of cool supplemental information. There's a thing in the beginning that has all the different characters and kind of a sentence or two about who they are. And then in the back, there are different things like comparing the pages and the panels in the comic to the source material that Herge used as reference. He apparently kept all these huge books of reference and then would go to them and they have those books. And so they're in there. These are aimed at younger readers. I will say that this particular story has some things that you might not want to show your kids, depending on how old they are. Tintin's friend, Captain Haddock, seems to drink a lot of rum or bourbon. I don't know if a kid would necessarily pick up on that. He just gets a little goofy. So that's kind of minor, but there is a guy that gets shot in the back several times. There's no blood or anything, but that does happen. And he survives. But heck, I recommend reading this book yourself if you're an adult, because it's a great adventure story. And this Tintin was another thing that wound up inspiring a lot of creative people later on. Obviously, Steven Spielberg and Peter Jackson, who both worked on the movie together, were inspired by it. They were really big in Europe. And so while it might not be something that American audiences are familiar with, it did still have a big influence. And it's just a great story. I finished it and I was like, oh, I wish I had picked up all the other Tintin books that guy had for $5. So those are two things that you might want to give a chance. Read it yourself, because I think they're good for adults, especially if you're kind of curious about the history of comics and what different comics from different countries can be like, and also for things that you could potentially read to your kids, maybe when they're a little older, and maybe even when they're a little bit older, depending on the Tintin stuff. But I just wanted to talk about those a bit because I thought they were great and fun and potentially good for kids, depending on your point of view on those things. So with that, I'm going to wrap up this episode. I hope everybody is having a good year so far. I hope we continue to have a good year. You can find me on poppapa.com. I'm hoping to get more of my photo diary posts up and do a little bit better in 2014 than I did in 2013, keeping up. You can also find show notes for this episode. There's going to be quite a bit from the links I mentioned, as well as all the past episodes of the Pop Papa Napcast and the review of Frozen that I mentioned. You can also check me out on United Monkey, that's MONKEE.com, where I write about books, movies, comics, and the like. I also have Monkeying Around the Kitchen, which is my food blog, where I talk about recipes I've tried, kitchen equipment I'm using, and on the occasion that we go out to eat, how that was. And I am on Twitter @PapaDeitch. That's PopPadietsch. All right, gang, have a good one.